Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
The champ is here. And I'm with Jeff, my co-host.
That's right.
Jeff, how the hell are you doing?
I got the post-WrestleMania blues. I know that happens to a lot of us sometimes, but moving forward, you know, upward and onward, as they say. We're on the road to backlash at this point. WrestleMania backlash, as they've been referring to it. So, yeah, we'll just see what happens. But overall, you know, just right back into it, you know.
I saw someone suggest they just add WrestleMania to every pay-per-view. So WrestleMania SummerSlam, WrestleMania Hell in the Cell, to really leverage that brand, as Stephanie McMahon would like to say.
That the WrestleMania Money in the Bank. I would pay that for that pay-per-view. You know, that's one that I would definitely invest in.
Well, it sounds like the ratings on Peacock have been pretty good.
I know recently you and I, we didn't really talk about it much, but I know they had the recent kind of financial calls. I thought it was kind of funny how Hunter referred to, like, they're fighting people texting, you know, like that is something that's taking from their market, is like people are texting during shows and things like that, or in the evening and not watching more TV. Like, yeah, okay, sure. Like, you know,
and they're so focused on their texting that they don't have any other, you know, television or music or any other form of media going on,
because we're not completely overloaded, yeah, with like stimulation to this point. Yeah, like, right, okay,
so
Roman's hurt or whatever it was the excuse last time around. Like, okay,
yeah,
like we'll see. Okay,
any announcements before we get started?
I don't think so. I not that I can think of, at least. Just kind of, you know, we're just plugging away.
So we always talk about why we are covering the match. Where do we remember where we found this one from? Was this just on a list of best matches of all time?
We've said it on the show before, kind of why we pick some of these matches that we do. And so we're trying to, one, find things that are, you know, on the network to kind of help out our listeners. So if they want to check these things out and they go back to it. And this was one. Yeah, I think that it was just one of those. I was just searching best backlash matches. And so in this month, you'll see that we've got a bunch of backlash coming your way. And so get ready for that. I think this was just one of the ones that, you said you didn't really remember this one.
I had never heard of this match. I don't remember anything about it.
And I know it was ranked, we'll get there, but it was ranked well. And so, yeah, it just kind of getting into this, it did have a kind of an interesting build, I say, a lot of post-Mania stuff. But a weird time, but just an interesting time. Like, yeah, we'll just get into it. I mean, there's really, you know, we're doing it. We're at that point now. Let's cover it.
All right, it's time for the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
So Backlash 2007, Jeff, I've historically, these Backlash pay-per-views usually seem to deliver. I just, in kind of the pay-per-view era, I just remember them always being good. In fact, not to give it away, but the match we're covering next week, I thought actually was better than their WrestleMania match. And so there's oftentimes where, for whatever reason, the Backlash match was better. Or the other thing that I've seen too is where the Backlash match maybe had a cool stipulation. So we'll get to it here in a second, be it a last man standing match. So sometimes you got a little more, you know, gimmicky and some bells and whistles, but the actual matches were better than the WrestleMania ones. So April 29th, 2007, Phillips Arena in Atlanta, packed house, 14,000. Dark match was Carlito defeating Johnny Nitro. Now, what do you prefer, Johnny Nitro or John Morris? Is the name
Johnny Nitro is definitely a better name. Talk about two guys that still around, though. Hey, you know, it's 2021 and these guys both on the card again.
So then we had the Hardys retaining their tag team championship against Cade and Murdoch. Melina, who's your single or is your women's champion, would defeat Mickie James to keep her title. Mickie James, someone that's recently been in the news. We're going to talk about that.
We'll get into
probably
that
later on today. Yes, we will. Chris Benoit, your U.S. champion, retains in 13 minutes against MVP. So we start off with three straight title matches and three straight retentions, but then we get a title change. Your ECW champion, Bobby Lashley, is going to lose a three-on-one match to Vince and Shane McMahon in Umaga. Vince McMahon's your new ECW champion.
Sure.
Wasn't looking for a comment. I just wanted that to settle in.
Yep. I'm just acknowledging it. Yep. I'm listening. Yeah,
and then, you know, in our string of champions retaining, well, so every match on this show was a title match, isn't that it?
I was just thinking that even when I typed these notes, this is a Night of Champions card. Like, yeah, this is before it even was a thing.
Undertaker and Batista are going to go to a draw in a last man standing match. So we're continuing that feud. Jeff, it's interesting because in an interview not that long ago, Batista said his best match of his career was against The Undertaker at the WrestleMania in Detroit. It was just prior to this show. And I'm like, I don't really remember that one. I need to go back and watch. It's like a 10-minute match or something. So I'm like, well, how good could a 10-minute match be? It was awesome. So next year I want to cover that one. It was a really, really, really good match. So these two they gelled. And I'm sure this match was awesome too. And then the main event, Cena, Orton, Edge, and Shawn Michaels. Talk about some star power. So we're going to cover this one. And I remember some things that happened at WrestleMania. I just don't remember this match at all. So I'm curious about the build. Walk us through it, Jeff.
Yeah, so we got a few things that were happening here. And these guys were, you know, I say these guys, Edge, Cena, Orton, Michaels, were at the top of the card through all this. And so I'll kind of go through each of them, but there's a lot of crossover too. So it saves a little bit of time so we can get into this match. So, of course, you've got this fatal four-way match for the WWE Championship as the main event at this on this card. Cena, I'll start with, in his 2007 began, he actually had a storyline with Kevin Federline. For those of you that might be a little bit younger or a little bit older and don't care like me. Kevin Federline was at one point the boyfriend, husband, don't even remember, of Britney Spears. And so he had his, you know, 2 weeks of viral fame. And so anyways that, you know, Cena had been feuding with him, sure, non-wrestler. But the first year or first Raw of the new year, 2007, Cena was actually pinned by Federline. There was an assist from Umaga. Sure. You know, and so that's how his year started. But then you had New Year's Revolution, Cena actually beating Umaga. This was the end of his undefeated streak. He actually retained the WWE Championship on that match. And then at Royal Rumble, you know, Cena beating Umaga was the last man standing match. We have actually discussed that match back in February, not too long ago. So that's when go back in the archives, check it out from that Royal Rumble. And so then the night after, there was really just kind of an impromptu tag match. You had Cena and Shawn Michaels taking on Rated RKO, the two, you know, so everyone in this match in a tag match. And Michaels and Cena, like, just getting thrown together, win the tag champs. So Cena was actually a double champ in this match. And actually beating Michaels as well too, to retain his title, at WrestleMania 23. So like Cena, you know, just riding high at this point. So Michaels was actually one of the final two people in the Royal Rumble. He was eliminated by the Undertaker,
which was that classic finish.
Yep.
Where they went like 10 minutes or something before the end of that. It was so cool.
Which Tom said already kind of led into the Undertaker and Batista. It was my hometown of Detroit. I was at that Mania 23 at Ford Field. That was for the World Heavyweight Championship. So, but Michael still earned the number one contender for the WWE Championship because he beat Orton and Edge. It was a triple threat match. And so that is why we had the Cena Michaels match at WrestleMania 23. So in the build to, like, just the WrestleMania match and then this, like, Michaels beating, you know, Rated RKO, Edge, and Orton. And so to take on Cena. Now, Edge and Orton on this piece of it, that actually these guys were, it was, you know, just really at the beginning of the year that Edge went to Orton and they decided to form a tag team because it was D-Generation X, who was the classic DX, Triple H and Shawn Michaels had reformed. And so they agreed to form their tag team at Rated RKO. You actually had them defending, they were the world tag champs. And so defending those against DX, which they got attacked by DX. Triple H actually got hurt during that match as well too. And so Rated RKO actually just continued the rivalry with Michaels while I figured it was a pectoral shoulder. I was reading it, but I didn't put it in my notes exactly what it was, but hurt himself in this match. So again, now interestingly enough too, while Michaels, and Undertaker were the final two in that Royal Rumble, the two eliminated before that were Edge and Orton. And so the final four of that Royal Rumble was three of the competitors in this match. And so they were like, I was very careful typing my notes up for this one because there's so much crossover. There was so much I didn't want to confuse even myself with, that how these guys were involved just in the really 4 months, you know, 5 months leading up to this match, as well as like previous to this with WrestleMania. Like they were just in each other's worlds, plain and simple. And so, like I said, then, you know, being eliminated from the Rumble, then the night after, you've got the impromptu tag match with Cena and Michaels winning that one. And then now, how, like, why are they rated RKO at this point? Like, kind of what's going on during this match? Like, they lost the tag titles after, you know, of course, to Cena and Michaels, and then they focused on the WWE Championship. And so, which again, Cena had. And so, just they, since both of them going after it, being the big names in the company, things like that, losing that triple threat match, which then gave him, Michaels, the opportunity against Cena, just like, you know, that's just how it worked out. Now at that WrestleMania card, while Michaels and Cena took on each other, I'll say that Orton and Edge were part of a Money in the Bank ladder match at that WrestleMania. That WrestleMania was actually won by Mr. Kennedy. So, you know, everybody's in each other's universes and things like that. And so you then get, there's a no contest. It was a number one contenders match for the championship where, of course, shenanigans, as we're both used to, like both men's shoulders were down. You know, wasn't sure exactly what was going on or things like that. So you had Orton and Michaels trying to figure out what was going, you know, them having that match and then the no contest. It was actually that same night that Edge came out. He, of course, his talk show, which, you know, talk shows work. It's something we don't talk about a whole lot on the show, but like those talking segments, if you got the right person, and Edge and of course Christian, like those were always really great kind of watching those. So doing the Cutting Edge, saying that Jonathan Coachman, who was the Raw general manager at the time, said that he was the number one contender and that he would get the opportunity to wrestle for the WWE title. So you've got Cena has the belt. Orton and Michaels had a match where it was a no contest. And then Edge just like declaring through Jonathan Coachman as GM that he is the number one contender. So, kind of a nice like way that this was kind of capped off, and it's something we don't talk about, especially with Cena. You got to wonder if he was involved with this to a degree. That it was actually a Make-A-Wish kid who was the honorary general manager who was given the opportunity to announce this Fatal 4-Way at Backlash. And so from a storyline perspective, like it all makes perfect sense why these guys need a match together, that, you know, Cena defending, you know, that he has a history with everybody. Everybody's got some crossover and history with each other. Let's put him in a four-way. Let's see what happens and where we kind of go from there. And to your point, I'll talk about it a little bit more after that. Like one of the quotes that I kind of found for this one was that there was a shocking lack of interest in the WWE Backlash pay-per-view, which was too bad. And then I will finish the rest of that quote later because we're going to talk about this match. We're going to get into it. We got things to talk about. But I would say like just four guys like really, you know, in their prime at this time get locked up in a Fatal 4-Way.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And, you know, what's interesting is going into this, right, I'm thinking, well, they just threw these four guys together. What you just said, though, I mean, everything was so intertwined, it made so much sense. So, you know how sometimes you get these like triple threats or these, you know, fatal four ways where, you know, the champ will be in the ring and then three different guys will walk in and interrupt each other. And it'll be like, oh, it's a four-way. Well, this actually makes sense. And it's the star power is unbelievable. The build for this was awesome. There's so much stuff happening. So I'm pumped to get into it. So if you want to watch with us, we're at the 2-hour and 13-minute mark on Peacock, which for our international listeners, it's the same time stamps on the WWE Network. So 2 hours and 13 minutes. They're all in the ring. We're ready to go. Jeff, are you ready to go?
I am ready to go. Like, I haven't watched this in either of you in a long time. So like, we're ready.
Well, then let's get to the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
All four in there. You got King and JR on commentary. Hey, let me start off with this. Look at Cena's ring gear. Do you think that the kind of goofy ring gear is one of the many things about him that makes him dislikable? Like, do you think that they just, you know, with the jean shorts or with the cargo shorts, or do you, because I look at his presentation, it's like, you know, Shawn Michaels, greatest in-ring worker of all time, Edge, you know, again, wrestling tights makes perfect sense. Orton, the traditional, you know, just wrestling trunks. It's like those are three athletes that are, you know, competing, and then you've seen it just looking like a goofball. Do you think that's part of why people just get annoyed with it?
I think it's who you talk to, because I know for a fact, I have a friend who has said the only man that she will fucking jorts is John Cena. So maybe it's just you and me that, you know, we are not the target demographic for that. Like, you know, she's just a big fan, you know, she's loves Cena, I guess, you know what, but yeah, I think that I wonder too, with like how good he was in the ring for so long. You especially hear like, I always think back to who was it, Dean Ambrose saying he hated wrestling in jeans. Like it was just terrible moving around. I wonder for Cena, like so much of the character, like, I've never heard him or seen anything where he said he disliked or, you know, liked, you know, what he had his ring gear as. But yeah, part of it too is, yeah, the presentation, like I've never really thought about it till you said it, but yeah, it makes sense.
I just look at it. It's like, his personality is so goofy and stupid, which is annoying, but then, you know, you throw in this ring gear and it's like, all right, you got the big tennis shoes and it looks kind of stupid. The shorts, it's like it's slapping it over your head that this is all like fake and goofy. It doesn't. I like my wrestling presented as athlete one, athlete two. We're going to find out who's the best in this physical competition. And I just think that, you know, when you deviate too far from that, it just looks stupid. And I think, you know, an Undertaker or a Bray Wyatt, I mean, I think you can get away with different types of ring gear. It's just, if Cena's going to be this jacked up, you know, huge megastar Hulk Hogan type, I don't like the gear.
Well, I wouldn't say Bray Wyatt because they don't know what they're doing with that guy. But
yeah, I know. But I'm just saying.
To your point, yeah, absolutely. So we had the face off with Michaels and Cena, and they took out Edge and Orton outside the ring. Now you've got Edge and Orton inside the ring. So just kind of, you know, the different teams kind of feuding back and forth, and you got Michaels and Cena are on the outside at this point. So
way less tattoos on Orton.
And a much younger Edge in there as well too. Yeah.
True that Vince said or thinks that Edge looks old now?
I don't know. I think I've read that.
Did you hear that too? One?
Yeah. And I, who knows? Who knows? Like, so we are hearing, and this is a good transition. We are hearing a lot of, when we are recording, there is a lot of backstage news coming out of WWE this week, like almost an obscene amount of stuff that it's crazy how much we're hearing right now.
Yeah. Part of it was the earnings call. I mean, that definitely presented a bunch of, you know, news and noteworthy things. Again, that the earnings call just happened at the time we're recording this. Yep. So that's part of it, but there just seems like a lot of news in general.
We're fresh on the Tuesday night move. I think so. There's a lot of, you know, and the ratings have gone up for both. They're not competing against each other. So that kind of makes sense. So yeah, I just kind of things happening. So you got everybody on the outside, Michael's climbing the turnbuckle.
Wow. That's a good one.
Wow. Yep. Back moonsault, just hitting them.
Let me tell you something. You brought up the earnings call, and let me make a very, very big and important statement, because I mean this wholeheartedly. This is not a throwaway comment. We, as in WWE fans, do not deserve Nick Khan. Yeah. This guy is brilliant. Okay. If for those that are listening to this that haven't already heard it, go find Nick Khan on Colin Cowherd's podcast. It was just a straight interview. Nick Khan used to be Colin Cowherd's agent when he was a sports agent.
If you have Adnan too, that's why he's announcing.
That's right. That's right. I mean, Nick Khan is brilliant. He's super well connected. He has a ton of credibility in the entertainment world. I have no idea why he took the WWE job. I mean that wholeheartedly. We are so lucky to have him. Now, look, the current product sucks, but he's not involved in booking. He doesn't write the storylines. He has nothing to do with it. So what I find so interesting, Jeff, is the WWE business, okay? They're on Peacock. They're more available than they've ever been. You can watch everything for free or $5 or $10 a month. The business of WWE is so much better than it's ever been. There's no time better to be a fan in terms of the ability to watch the product, ton of content, everything's available. Peacock opens up more doors than even the network did, and the network was awesome. So, I mean, again, this has nothing to do with storylines. This has nothing to do with anything except the fact that as a business, they are doing an absolutely incredible job, and Nick Khan is the real deal, and he's bringing in the real deal of people in the entertainment and business world. So this is only the beginning. You're going to see more stuff. You're going to see more major things happen. WWE is going to be largely, and better distributed all over the globe. I mean, I'm just blown away by what they're doing. Again, this has nothing to do with storylines at all. But from a business standpoint, it's incredible what they're doing right now.
So I was actually wrong. Like, it was actually Khan that made this comment about, and I'll quote it here. He was asked if WWE thinks about AEW or cares about them. He said, obviously everything is competition for everything. The movies are our competition. People sitting and deciding just to text all night is our competition. All we're focused on is attracting eyeballs to our content. And so, that was a quote from him. And he has been, when we're recording this, he has been in the news, the dirt sheets a lot this week because, like, he's firing people. Like, they've had some shit that happened backstage. Like, he is all over the place. And even I was confused the first time I saw his name. Oh, Cena taking a huge dive. They're missing it. I thought it was like related to Tony Khan. Like, I thought they were talking about that at the time, and I had a double take. I was like, oh, wait a minute. No, it's somebody else. Like, and I don't know when they brought him in. Like, that's one thing. Like, it was obviously
it's been about a year now, I think.
It was, because I was gonna say, was it summer? Yeah. And so, but this week was obviously like a chopping block was this week. Yeah.
Well, look, I know people get so caught up in these, talent cuts and in these, a lot of action in the ring too, really, really good match. People get so caught up about these talent cuts, but Jeff, I mean, these aren't lifetime contracts. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're talent, and they're independent contractors that are talent. And, it's no different than a musician or an actor or anyone else. And, if they have nothing for the person, they don't owe someone an income for the rest of their life.
Well, and I did appreciate and it made me really think about it. And I don't have a fully formulated opinion on this one. And I'd be interested what you think too, that the article was about, it was actually Billy Kay and how WWE went against their own mantra of like, if you get an opportunity, take it and make the most of it. I won't deny, like, she did has done a good job with like this resume angle that she had before she, you know, was fired and let go, future endeavors. And like, she did make the most of it, and then she still got fired for it. So like the whole point of the article was they're not even there. There's definitely a shift in the winds, if you will, because the old ways and like things that, you know, whether they were just, you know, preconceived notions or, you know, things that were always that way for a long time. So that's what we felt like things are definitely changing because they're just not certain things are not being handled the way they used to be.
Well, you know, I think maybe the most egregious example of someone that got themselves over and then was punished for it was Zack Ryder. I mean, those YouTube videos he was putting together were off the charts incredible.
Yeah.
And they did nothing with the guy, you know? So, yeah, I know it sounds good to, you know, to say, oh, well, you know, take it upon yourself and get yourself over. Look, you know, and again, it's probably no different than anything else in Hollywood, but because that's really what this is. It's an entertainment company that runs itself like Hollywood. Yeah, they like you or they don't like you, you know? And another thing to keep in mind is without fans right now, I don't think they have a clue who is and is not over.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they look at certain metrics on social media to see discussion or positive and negative sentiment. But, you know, how did they used to make decisions back in the day? Well, they made decisions based on the audience. Yep. You know, you'd sit through the curtain and you just listen, you know, and oh, well, we just did a house show loop in the Northeast and in New York and Boston and Philadelphia. And holy shit, this guy that, you know, we weren't that high on, people went nuts for him. So yep. Maybe we should push him. So now that we don't have that, you really don't know who is and is not over, which means you're now – the fans have less influence now than they had a year ago, certainly 5 or 10 years ago. And I think that's a major, major problem right now. They just don't know who's moving the needle. Yeah, they have T-shirt sales. Yeah, they can see social media chatter. But in terms of like a live audience, it's really tough. Oh, and by the way, if there is no crowd, you don't have to abide by anything. So, you know, Daniel Bryan not winning or even participating in that Royal Rumble, the fans let you know. But right now, there are no fans. So they can just do whatever the hell they want, and they think they know best. And they really have no idea who is and is not over. And it's creating a lot of major problems. So it's to the fans' benefit for us to get back in front of an audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're trying. We know that. So even with some of the big four, if you will. So we've had a lot. We've been kind of watching that. We've been talking a lot here, but kind of, you know, back to this match a little bit. So we've had a lot like individual spots with different guys. You had Edge and Orton had Michaels kind of locked up and kind of a submission. Each had a half crab, if you will. And then Cena kind of clearing the rings and things like that. It hasn't been. Sometimes when you get four guys in the ring, it's very sloppy and it's hard, you can tell they're not, you know, very coordinated with four guys out there, but they're doing a good job right now of kind of focusing on individual guys or, you know, just one-on-one of kind of what's happening and things like that. Now you got Michaels with Orton up on the table going for something, pile driver or something, and Edge hits him with a chair at the back. And so they've done a good job of, I say, setting up the spots on this one so that it doesn't look just too, and Orton giving him the thumbs up like the tag team there, but then,
oh,
betrayal
to the head.
Yeah,
like clean. What year we're watching. Yeah, I forget.
Yeah, clean chair shot there from Edge to hit Orton. Yeah, after he kind of saved him as well too. So everybody's on their feet too.
Oh yeah, no, this is a great match. You know, there's always intrigue as to who's going to win too. You know, I mean, any of these four guys obviously is capable of being world champ. Okay. Cena's got the SCFU in on Edge. You've heard me say it on here before. Look at his arms. I mean, look, have you seen a more fake submission ever.
He's not even really
in the history of wrestling. Is there a more fake submission than John Cena locking this bullshit?
That looked really bad there too, because his arms kind of dropped. His arms dropped a little bit. Edge did a good job of putting his chin down, but yeah, there's not really anything. I think part of it, maybe the leg, and he got the leg tied up and maybe the crank there, but I doubt it. But fans excited for it though. Yep. Go ahead.
There's some rumors swirling that SummerSlam is going to have an audience. And I guess Phoenix, my hometown, is in the mix. How cool would that be?
Yeah, that's one definitely that, you know, it'd be really nice. I'm fine with that because, yes, I get like the small, I say small venues like arenas. It could be tough. Like there's just a lot. It varies from state to state. Like, you know, policing it is difficult, at least if they're doing it in some of these outdoor stadiums. Like, you know, hey, if there's nothing going on, like, yeah, why not? Because what the Royal Rumble was Diamondbacks, right?
It was
at the baseball stadium. So you obviously couldn't do that right now.
That. Yeah. I'm guessing they would do football, which they've had WrestleManias there before. So I'm thinking like, it'd be pretty cool to do like open air, you know, stadium for SummerSlam. Well, and the thing is with like distancing, even if you don't do a great crowd, you'll never know because they can just say it was due to social distancing. Right. Well, and so, I mean, they could configure it for 30,000 people, you know, and it would still look great on TV.
Well, and they did the cardboard cutouts, which apparently Vince wasn't a fan of those for a while, but then they still did them, which, you know, it does like, and when you're in the moment in the match, like you're only seeing that lower, you know, 10th of the arena anyways, like, yeah. So it's really not a big deal at that point. So Michael's tuning up the band now. He's got Cena in the ring. But Edge, trying to come in, stop him. These guys too, they're moving well. Like, you know, I say,
well, you made a great point. You're like, these guys are all basically in their prime.
Yeah. I'd say I don't want to say Michaels is past it. He's not, but he's
definitely, he's
I feel like he's been around the longest.
He's still in his prime. He'll still go out there.
And yes. And so just power slamming guys as well too. And okay, again, you know, just looking good in the chaps too, which someone pointed out to me, there's no, what was the comment I heard? Like, if they're not assless chaps, there's just pants, like, and so, or you can't have that or something like that. I forgot, I'll have to look it up, but,
this match is really heating up, man. So you got Cena going for the,
we got big spot here. What's going on?
Yeah. Wow.
Oof. Yep. They didn't try to flip him. That was good. They just kind of cascade suplex, you know, backbreaker, everything. Yeah.
So Mike Chioda is the ref in this match.
Yes. Your buddy. Look,
hell of a nice guy. Okay. Doesn't really have much to say though. He was on a podcast I was listening to like last week or the week before. And I'm like, oh man, this guy, he was in WWE for 20 some years. He probably has all these incredible stories. Jeff, I there was nothing that was worth me telling you about in an hour long interview. I don't know if it was a lousy interview. It was, it's that guy. I think he does some stuff with AAW, that Chris Van Fleet. I think we've seen him at StarCast or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. He does some stuff in wrestling. I don't know. He's not the best interviewer in Kyoto. I mean, they just, I don't even know what they talked about for an hour. I mean, it was so uninteresting.
Oh boy. Cena got, Well, at some point, some people,
wow.
So RKO HBK out of nowhere. Yep.
HBK going for the super kick, RKO out of nowhere. So Michaels is out. Edge is still standing.
Edge is trying to suplex or slam both Edge and Orton. Yeah. Or Michaels. Yeah. All kinds of things happening at this point. Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I was talking to a friend actually this week because she's getting interviewed on she's a physical trainer. She's getting interviewed on a podcast herself. And so she was asking me for some pointers and things like that. And I told her, I was like, just be yourself. Like that's such a big part of it. Things like that. And it's gotta be tough because in this, like, you know, playing the character even, and you and I have talked about it. Like we're not a big fan of some of the AEW refs because they're too involved in the match. Like they're just far too animated. You know, there you go. Cena, or yeah, was it Edge? Cena jumping over Edge, ooh, going for an RKO. Oh, Cena pushing off the RKO into a spear from Edge.
Holy shit.
AA, super kick. Cena falls on Orton.
Wow.
Is that three?
That was three. That is the match.
Wow, that's the match. All right.
Dude, that was a hell of a finish.
Crazy finish. Oh, my God.
Holy shit.
Fans are up on their feet.
So what all just happened there?
That was, you had super, you had everybody going for finishers and spears.
I'm sure they're going to show it again. Let's keep this on and
we'll keep talking.
Wait for the replay. I mean, this was, that was a hell of a finish.
With especially all four guys are in the ring. Like, I feel like that's rare to see. It wasn't a clean finish, but to not have, you know, to have all four guys in there and not have it get sloppy. All right,
there you go. So, yep.
Missing, so the AA,
yeah,
spear, AA to Edge, super kick, Cena falls on Orton, Kyoto recognizes it, and then Michaels tries to get there after realizing what he did. He can't. This is a good spear. Oof, it's always a good spear from him. He's definitely one of the best.
Wow.
Hits it, and there's the super king.
That is a hell of a finish. Wow, that was awesome.
That was great, too. Michael's diving at the end there. Wow. Okay.
Let's get into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
Okay, what'd you think?
That was, in all the research I did not read about the exact, how the finish played out, and I'm glad I didn't. Like, I think even reading it, I wouldn't have known like how it was going to play out, because it's just a lot of action. There was just things happening. And it made sense. Like, we don't always get that, but that made a ton of sense.
I liked it. I really liked it. That was a hell of a finish.
Right. Wow. Okay. Okay. So, wow. Well, getting into it, what happened? So, of course, we had the crazy finish with finishers and all kinds of things happening. You've got Michaels and Cena kind of yelling at each other at this point, too. But, like, you know, what happened with all these guys after the fact? So, you know, getting into it. So, Cena actually started feuding with the Great Khali. Khali kind of declaring that he wanted a shot at Cena's championship. So, over the next couple of months, Cena actually feuded with him. He was actually the first person to defeat the Great Khali by submission. That was actually at Judgment Day, and then pinfall at One Night Stand. It was a false count anywhere match. And so, that's how that played out. So you got Michaels and Cena are kind of yelling at each other in the ring. Still, I still got it on. I don't know if you do, but Michaels and his storyline, he actually started feuding with Randy Orton. It was Randy Orton kind of declaring that he could beat Michaels. This was not the kind of, you know what was happening and things like that. And kind of the crossover on this is when he was getting into the Legend Killer persona as well too. So at this time he had taken out Rob Van Dam, you know, Ric Flair, Sergeant Slaughter, like those, you know, that type of stuff happening. And so had an interview. So this was too, as well, the Michaels fake collapsing as well too, in his match against Orton as well. You know, kind of beating him up on the stretch and things like that. And so that piece of it, he was actually storyline given a concussion after the Orton beatdown because he had to have surgery. He actually came back and switched in music Orton after, like, at the end of this 2007. And so, you know, kind of interesting how that played out. But this is actually also, and I didn't realize this kind of 2 months, 3 months after this pay-per-view and kind of a little bit before, when Orton was doing the Legend Killer stuff, this is the first time that he started being referred to as the Viper. And so it would have been 2007, which we always hear that and things, stuff like that. And of course it's, you know, stalking his victims, you know, stalking his prey and things like that. But it was in this period in 2007 when he was first started to be called the Viper. sure. And so I didn't realize exactly when it was. And so Edge, though, went on. He actually started feuding with the Money in the Bank winner, Mr. Kennedy. So all these guys really, in a lot of ways, kind of went their separate ways once this was done, other than kind of Michaels and Orton for just a little bit here. So, but Edge, too, taking on Mr. Kennedy as well, too, who had the briefcase. He wanted the briefcase. This was still early, I say, in the kind of Money in the Bank era. Edge was actually the first person to get the Money in the Bank briefcase twice. And he was actually the first person to do it not in a ladder match. And so kind of trivia for you today. Of course, when he beat Kennedy at this point to get the briefcase from him. And so he actually ended up cashing in against The Undertaker. I kind of went back and watched it, actually. It's kind of cash in. It was a beatdown from Mark Henry, and then it was a match against Batista, and then a beatdown from Mark Henry, and then Edge came to cash in. It was actually interesting. Like, there was some crossover there, because at the time, Edge was a member of SmackDown, or excuse me, he was on Raw. He became a member of SmackDown from when he kind of cashed in his briefcase and stuff like that. It was interesting. And this is when he had to give up the belt because of a injury, but it was interesting too, because it was so early in kind of the Money in the Bank conception, like people didn't know how to react. And so there really wasn't like an above average pop for when he cashed in. They're very slow about announcing it, like kind of, you know, what was happening and things like that. And so fans were like, they just weren't, they weren't popping as like you and I would expect. I think like when Dean cashed in on Seth and things like that, I think it was Seth. Yeah. And so, yeah, it just, you know, little things like that. It was just kind of interesting how to play. So like I said, these guys are kind of going their separate ways, but, you know, still involved. And they had had, some longer feuds before this. So it does kind of make sense to go separate ways, but still good storylines. Like I'd say wrestling was hot at this point. And so I wasn't watching as much in 2007, but still, you know, good stuff though.
Yeah. Real good stuff. I mean, little forgotten, but it's a lot of stuff that happened in this era that I, for whatever reason, just don't remember. You know, it was like kind of the shift of like, again, now we're getting brand splits. We're getting ECW. We're getting invasions. I mean, it's just, there got to be a certain point, you know, where more and more stuff was happening, and just things slipped through the cracks.
Yeah. So where do these guys rank? Kind of what do we got in the reviews? Things like that. So John Cena was number one, PWI 2007. John Cena 1, Edge 2, Shawn Michaels 6, Randy Orton 15. And so this is probably like, in regards to number of competitors, this is definitely the highest ranked match that we've ever covered in regards if you're just looking at the PWI. And so, kind of the overall, Observer Newsletter on this one, your favorite. There was a shock, and this is the quote I said at the beginning. There was a shocking lack of interest in the WWE Backlash pay-per-view, which is too bad since it ended up being one of the best WWE shows in a long time. This is a hell of a show, bell to bell. Undercard was strong with no bad matches. Taker and Batista was just slightly below what they did at WrestleMania. Finish really sucked, though. And the main event four-way was excellent. Good guys had a meeting early, which upset the bad guys. So the good guys punched him, and then Sean went right after Cena. Heels tossed them, acted like they were going to team up, but then got into a brawl themselves. So everyone hates each other, basically. 4.5 stars. Which, yeah, it makes sense. They hate each other. They've had a lot of feuds. You don't really need more than that. So couple other interesting, right? So the last three to four minutes were just wall to wall action, and the intrigue with all the forming and fading alliances just added to the match. The only knock is that I never had the feeling that Cena's title was in jeopardy to anyone but Michaels, making the heels little more than props. Minor gripe though, this was a 3.5 stars, and then they kind of keep writing. Backlash usually delivers every year, and this one was no exception. I like a more relaxed version of WrestleMania where they can get, let it all hang out. The aspect that really stood out for me was the actual booking of matches. Most of the matches had some sort of new spot or something that played off of other matches. Give the agents a raise. Two very good world title matches and a quality US title match add up to a fun pay-per-view for all. So, you got 4.5, you got 3.5. Tom, what do you have?
So our payoff score, and again, we do it 1 to 10 based on the build, the payoff, and the aftermath. I'm going to give this a 7.5. I thought, really good build, fun match, nothing out of this world extraordinary, but really, really strong finish. So yeah, I got no problem with this at all. 7.5. What about you?
I probably would have given it a 7 until the final, and then I give it an extra half because and it just, it makes sense because that was, you and I were both kind of shocked. It's, you know, it's exciting for you and I to be sitting here and be genuinely shocked by what we see sometimes, in a good way, not like a chair shot shock, but like to have something like that happen. And we're like, damn, like that was actually, like, it was just a good wrestling match. Like sometimes like, that's just what you and I want is just, hey, like put on a, you know, I want to be sports entertained and that's what I was. And so, hey, thanks for that. So a couple 7.5s all around like that. It works for me. Absolutely. Final thoughts?
Well, no final thoughts, man. Enjoyed it.
Yeah. More backlash next week. More backlash this month. Just all kinds of good wrestling this month.
Yeah, I'm excited. Well, next week we're talking about the first ever backlash.
That's right. 1999. One of your favorite eras. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, well, as always, thank you for joining us on an all-new episode of The Payoff.